Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the LCI Green Room, open and unscripted, where we have conversations with different people, often across the Liberty Movement, and people who are just doing exciting things that we want to have conversations with. I am Jacob Winograd. I am the host also of the Biblical Anarchy podcast here with the Libertarian Christian Institute, which is part of our Christians for Liberty network. And we have a very exciting guest that I'm really super thrilled to speak to tonight. I found out about her a few weeks ago and found her podcast and have been listening to that and finding out more about what she does. And so we're going to have a conversation about that tonight and things pertaining to schooling and education and the culture here in America and the way that the church can play a role in helping to advance our values into the country and, you know, help give families more options and more freedom. So our guest for tonight is Lisa Watson, who is the host of the Schools Out podcast with the Herzog Foundation. Am I pronouncing that right? Is it Herzog Foundation? Yeah. So Lisa, thank you for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Jacob. Nice meeting you on Twitter.
Yeah, it's nice to, you know, it's as much as X can be or Twitter can be, you know, a cesspool at times. This is, you know, one of those good moments where, you know, people are able to connect and network. And so thank God for that. You know, it's one of the innovations of the free market. And so comes with its good and bads, but this is one of the goods. So Lisa, you have a really interesting backstory. So you came from the left, which I did as well. So I was like a Bernie Sanders Democrat back in like 2015. And then after the 2016 election, when Trump won and the left went insane, I found myself politically homeless. You have, though, a resume from the left that is pretty interesting. So I have it up here. I took this from one of your posts on Twitter or X. You said, "Once upon a time, I was an atheist, a feminist, an evolutionist, a union steward, ACLU affiliate board member, ACLU national board member, ACLU chapter president, ACLU affirmative action officer, as well as a racial justice task force co-chair and Planned Parenthood intern." So that is, you know, how did you go from that to where you are today? Because that is a testimony that I'm just excited to hear.
Sometimes I wonder, how did I get there? I'm just a basic girl from Kansas. Don't I look like the stereotype of a basic girl from Kansas? I had a pretty unremarkable childhood. That's what I tell people, one of four children from Kansas. But I did end up moving to Los Angeles for college. So that was the beginning of the conveyor belt. Oh, let me start by saying, Jacob, thanks for having me.
Well, of course.
Thanks for having me. But again, I ended up moving to Los Angeles for college, and I didn't know there was a such thing as indoctrination in college. I never heard of that before, but that is what happened to me. So I really got enmeshed in a lot of ideas that I was not familiar with growing up in Kansas. One of the big ones was that Jesus is a myth. Humans just make these things up to explain the universe. And I remember this day where I was in shock because I never heard a grown-up say something like that. They definitely didn't say that in Kansas at the time. And I was so perplexed. I thought, is he saying that Jesus is like Zeus and Apollo? And I was rattled. And that just began, that was the first domino to me going into a lot of doubt and confusion. I ended up moving back to Kansas City and graduating from a school here. And my senior year, I needed, I was doing work study at the Women's Center. So without knowing it, I'm getting immersed in feminist culture. But I needed an internship. So a person got a connection for me at the local Planned Parenthood. So now, again, without knowing it, you're getting immersed in pro-choice, pro-abortion culture. I ended up again, I moved back to Los Angeles for a couple of years and then moved back to Kansas City. And when I was here, I went to a party with a friend of mine. And the host of the party was the president of the ACLU. So we hit it off. And then I was invited to join the board. While on the board, I was asked to become the affirmative action officer. And then soon after, I was asked to become the president of the chapter, co-founded the Racial Justice Task Force, and then landed on the board in New York. So again, your life is like a little conveyor belt and you're sort of on automatic pilot. And I thought I was having the time of my life, to be honest with you. Everything was lined up. I was working a job in the telecom industry, and that's where I became the union steward. So I was a union steward for 5 years with the ACLU, probably 8 or 9 years. So everything was working out perfectly. I ended up having an experience, which people, I would have to say a supernatural experience, where I literally heard a voice. And the voice said that you're being lied to. Now, we're going to need a whole other podcast if you want me to go into that. But I was watching a television show. Well, I tried to watch a television show that was a movie, and the movie didn't come on. Instead of the movie coming on, this other show came on, and the show was called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was hilarious. I said, I'm going to watch it. And the guy who's an apologetics guy, he's popular on Twitter. I give a shout out to him, Frank Turek.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he started laying out, in this particular show, he announced that he could prove the existence of God and he didn't need the Bible. So I said, go for it. So he starts breaking down all of these hoaxes in science that were selling evolution, which I never thought about it as being sold to us, and the lies. And I specifically recognized some of those lies. So by the end of the show, I was bewildered and I literally felt dizzy. I felt lightheaded. And I had turned on the side of the bed, and that's when I heard the voice. And the voice said, you're being lied to.
Wow.
It was crystal clear. And I'm wondering about all of the people on this show that he was talking about. He talked about Einstein. He talked about Hubble. He talked about hoaxes in just various evolution hoaxes that they had discovered years and years and years later. He talked about the lies that keep getting promoted in the textbooks. And I'm thinking all of these people that he's discussing lived across centuries. There's no way they can't get together and have a lie, especially just for me. And then the voice said that the God of the Bible is true. Jesus is his son. When Satan fell, he took a third of the angels and they created all the other religions because they want to be worshiped. Well, I never had this thought in my life. And all I could think of was, I gotta look into this. And it just took me on this little journey. I tell people I went to YouTube University, just researching all of these, you know, so-called lies. You know, the algorithm will, once you start looking up one thing, it'll start telling you other things. And a lot of the things that it just started showing me were questions that I had, questions I forgot I had about the Bible, about Christianity, about Jesus, about the truth, universe. And I just slowly, without realizing it, was getting unraveled out of the lies. So this was like a 2-year journey, but came out of it. And then I was really mad. And I said, I want revenge. That's so mean. So now I've ended up in this other path with trying to tell people the truth, to not want what happened to me to happen to other people. So I was directed. The same voice is still directing me. I know some people think it's weird, but it is what the scripture says, that you will hear his voice. And so I get directed. I got directed that I'm supposed to be in the school choice movement. And that Christian kids need to have a Christian education, which is what the scripture says. So once I started all this research, I was perplexed. I was bewildered that these are some of the first numbers I found, that there's 99,000 government schools. Did you know that, Jacob, that there's 99,000 government schools?
I know that because I listened to your show over the last couple weeks.
And that there's 330,000 churches. That's the lowest number I found. I found some numbers in 450,000. So I went with the lowest number. But again, in what world can 330,000 not take down 99,000? If we had little micro schools in every church, we would not have the society that we're living in right now. So there's no reason for Christians to be wringing their hands when they literally own all of this infrastructure that could dismantle every other aspect of the left. You're handing them five-year-olds, but then you want to wrestle over 25-year-olds. Once that person has already made every mistake, now they need rehab. Now they need welfare. Now they need food stamps. Now they need Section 8. They wouldn't be in that position if you would just take over education, which is where it started.
Yeah. Well, and like you shared your story, and there's, you know, my life went differently, but what's similar is that I found myself on the left through, kind of like being raised in that indoctrination. Like, I was raised in a conservative Christian household, but I wasn't homeschooled. I went to church, but I spent, you know, where kids spend the majority of their time, they spend it in the public schools, or I prefer to call them public indoctrination camps. And, you know, by the time if you go to college, it's worse. And, you know, but even if you just, you know, go through the high school system, by the time you leave, you've kind of been trained to be, you know, a sort of a machine that regurgitates government propaganda about not just about like values and like the beliefs of like our day, but even the things that they teach you about history in history class and in science class. They think that they're just teaching you, you know, they put it in the language of this is just a basic education, but like, no, you're teaching me a worldview.
Right.
with a little bit of, you know, forced memorization and I guess some education. Really, it's not learning, right? Like we homeschool our kids. My wife and I, we have four kids, and God's blessed us with another one that we'll have at the end of July. So we'll have five total. And we always, emphasize that although like the school district makes, you know, and the laws, they make you do evaluations and stuff, but for the most part, we don't judge our kids on test scores. We're like, we're trying to teach you how to learn and how to think and teach you a worldview that will then, you know, when you're an adult, will be able to sustain you, rather than, you know, government schools that seem to just teach you memorize it. Like, you know, I did well in school, but really it's just like I'm good at cramming things in and memorizing them, and then you regurgitate them for a test, and then you lose if being generous here, you lose 95% of it, if not all of it. You know, I can barely remember the things that I learned in physics or trig, or, you know, if it's, unless you go into a career where you use that. So, very, very similar. So a lot of the things you said, I was able to identify with, even though we had slightly different, slightly different experiences. Something I heard you say in your podcast, and you kind of started to touch on this a little bit there. You said conservatives don't understand social movements, that you were trying to understand why we as Christians are, and as conservatives are, sort of like losing this battle to the left and to the state and to, you know, the people who hate our, you know, our values and the way that we want to live our lives, and that want to force their way of viewing the world on us. And it's like, how are we losing? You pointed out, like, there are more churches than there are schools. So what's the deal here? And you said that you had this aha moment where basically you realized conservatives don't understand social movements. So could you expound a little bit upon that for the audience and kind of explain what you mean by that and how that, you know, realization kind of gave you a roadmap to how you think we can start to, I guess, like turn the tide?
My pleasure. That's the main thing. We could spend the rest of the show talking about this. So I come out of the left, and I had a very minimal understanding of even conservatives or Republicans or whatever this side meant. I literally sat down. I'm very methodical. I got a pen and paper, and I made a list of conservative issues. And I wrote down things like strong borders, Second Amendment, low taxes. And I started looking up local groups that covered those issues. And I quietly would go to their meetings and sit in the back. And then they would talk, and you would look at your watch, and you're thinking, well, this is going to wrap up soon, and they haven't told us what to do. And if I'd be, which they never would tell you what to do, then you would be walking in your car, and I would be thinking, what's the plan? What's the plan? They never told me the plan. So fast forward, I get totally out of the left. I'm fully committed to this side. And I finally realized this isn't, I thought I was in the wrong political party, that was the depth of what I was doing wrong. Well, apparently this has nothing to do with political parties. Political parties are nothing compared to what the real problems are. So now I start talking to people that are conservatives more. I didn't even know what they were missing. I know they weren't getting it. I know they would argue with me, but I didn't know why. Like, where were we having the disconnect? Until one day I had the aha moment, and I said, oh, conservatives don't understand social movement. See, the social movement is the framework that the left uses to change the culture. So if you have a vehicle, so the way I talk about it in my podcast is the conservatives use issue advocacy. So there may be some tax increase in your community that you want to defeat. Right, you've heard that before. You want to defeat this tax increase. We just had one locally. They use all their energy like a hamster on a hamster wheel. They get out the vote and they defeat the tax increase. Well, the day after they win, where do those people go? They just go back home because you won.
Right.
Well, you see, on the liberal side, you never go home. You never win. You don't want to win. It's not even possible to win. Let me give you an example. Have you ever heard of the feminist movement?
Yeah.
And they're seeking equality, right?
That's the way they would put it.
Right, but can you get equality?
Sorry, can I what?
Is equality possible?
Ooh, depends how you define it, but I would say truest sense of the word, no.
And there you go. So my movement never ends because we can never achieve our aims. I can always come up with more examples of, okay, it's 1919. We want the vote, right? Women wanted the vote. Well, they got the vote, but did the feminist movement end when they got the vote? No, because it wasn't about the vote. So the women that started the feminist movement are dead. We're on the third wave of the feminist movement. You really want a movement that you can hand down from generation to generation to generation. I can't hand down, we're going to defeat this tax increase from generation to generation to generation. There's two different natures to what you're doing. So once I knew, okay, this is a disconnect. How do I train people on understanding social movements? So that's what I'm spending most of the podcast trying to do. Train conservatives on the nature of what you're doing. Issue advocacy must go away. You have to build social movements. So you told me you heard of the feminist movement. Let me ask you about some others. Have you ever heard of the labor rights movement?
Mm-hmm.
That started in the 1930s. Have you ever heard of the civil rights movement?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
1960s. The pro-choice movement?
Yes.
The climate change movement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so give me your list. You've heard of Black Lives Matter movement?
Right, yeah.
Marriage equality movement?
Yep.
Okay, so give me the list of the conservative movements, because I just gave you 8 or 9. Each one of those has touched every aspect of our culture. They're global.
Mm.
If you're yeah. not creating a social movement, you're not winning. The social movements are working 24 hours a day. They are manifested in the nonprofits, the colleges, K through 12, Hollywood, marketing, in your own home life. A lot of people are manifesting like the feminist movement. So again, you can't win using your model. You don't have the right tools to transform the culture. So now, guess what I recognize in a particular candidate? First, let me give you the 7 characteristics first, real quick. I sat down and I wrote down, like, what characterizes a social movement? 1, you need charismatic leadership. So if we're talking about the civil rights movement, you can think of Malcolm X. You can think of Martin mm-hmm. Luther King. Those are charismatic leaders. If we're talking about the feminist movement, you can talk about Gloria Steinem. And there was other feminists that meet that level. Labor movement, Cesar Chavez. Climate change, Greta Thunberg. Feminist movement, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the original feminist. Pro-choice movement, they had Faye Waddleton. She was the president of Planned Parenthood. They're all going to have a charismatic leader, hopefully more than one. So if you have a movement and no one knows who that person, the leader of it is, you don't really have a movement. You still have an issue. The next thing you're going to need is powerful messaging. Give you some more examples. My body, my choice. You can ask any 18-year-old above, well, what does that stand for? They can tell you. If I say Black Lives Matter, that's their slogan.
Yep.
I know those things seem minor, but they're not. If you don't have a slogan, you don't have a movement. Then you're going to need independent funding sources. That's the nonprofit industrial complex. They represent funding. Also, you have Hollywood. You have major funders. Like, who do we keep hearing about again and again and again? George Soros. So they are financing the movements. Next, you're going to need an infrastructure. So the ACLU has offices across the country. That's infrastructure. Planned Parenthood has offices across the country, infrastructure, NAACP, infrastructure. What's the infrastructure for conservatives? Now, we forgot that the left also has K-12 that's being funded by our tax dollars, university and mainstream media. Another thing the left is going to do is they're going to leverage the power of personal testimony. The minute something doesn't go their way, you're going to start seeing everybody that's negatively impacted by this conservative policy. So the minute that abortion gets thrown back to the states, we're going to start hearing every story of every woman that needed an abortion was being denied one. You have to leverage individual faces to your movement. Then you're going to need an activist class. After that, or within some combination of this, guess what you're going to get? You're going to get favorable legislation. Conservatives think you get legislation first. No, you change hearts and minds, then the legislation will come, because the legislators, they want the votes. So conservatives can't get good legislation because their people, their leaders are afraid. Well, if we do that, then the people are going to vote us out. So you need to be changing the political climate. All of the social movement changes the political climate before they get the legislation. So when I'm looking at something that's going on now, I'm recognizing, wow, This is a movement. When I look at Donald Trump's campaign, we have a charismatic leader, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he have slogans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Make America great again. That's a huge marketing tactic.
Go woke, go broke.
Yep.
When I saw that you have to be able to penetrate culture, he's penetrated culture with these slogans, even the people that don't like him. What did he say? Fake news.
What, it was so funny to see how a lot of the establishment Republicans hated Trump. And I was like, and even if you know, there's things that I would disagree with Trump on, but I was like, he's bringing to you what you have, the conservatives have failed to have, which is a lot of things you're pointing out. It's like, that's what attracted people to him, was because he was a, you know, he was a fire. He was a fighter. He was a charismatic leader, and he was able to, you know, actually provide marketing rather than just kind of like, well, we want to reduce the corporate tax rate from 42% to 35%. Like, it's kind of hard to get people out to the polls when you're just giving them policies rather than giving them these, you know, these kind of like rallying cries that make them kind of feel like they're part of something.
Exactly. Even the little red hat, like he was almost going through the social movement checklist and checking things off. So I knew, okay, this guy is building a social movement, whether he knows it or not. This is what's happening. He is at least walking that walk. So it's like a formula. If you put everything together to make the cake, if you have all the right ingredients, you're going to get cake. So if he has the right ingredients, he's going to get success. Now, sorry. I started applying that to school choice. This is what we need to understand the formula, and then we're going to transform the culture using this vehicle. So if I do the parallel, again, go back to women wanting the vote. Women wanting the vote was the issue. The issue was put inside of a social movement. The issue was the gasoline in the tank of the social movement. School choice is an issue. We put that inside of the school choice education freedom movement. Now we have a movement that can transform the culture. So let me tell you how. School choice and failing schools intersect every aspect of Christian, conservative, and libertarians' concerns. Libertarians slightly get on my nerves.
we are very good at doing that, even with each other.
I tried to be a libertarian. I'm so happy that you say you're a Christian libertarian, because I kept saying you're not going anywhere without the morality. You can't. Just
Yes.
Unfettered. You can do whatever you want, and then I'm going to end up with the bill. Okay.
I've always said, and actually I stole this from Dave Smith, but I believe that I think conservatives need to learn a libertarian lesson, but libertarians need to learn a conservative lesson, because I think libertarianism like would work on paper maybe, but I think in actuality, like, libertarians don't understand, actually you say conservatives don't understand social movements. Libertarians just don't often understand how society works and like just human psychology, and they don't understand how like a lot of libertarians are confused and think that, like, well, if we want, you know, limited government, that means we should also embrace like a libertine social ethic and a culture that doesn't have personal responsibility and virtue at the heart of it. Like, no, like libertarianism needs those things if it's going to be successful. And I actually see a lot of that in what you're saying, which is like, you're saying like, we actually need to build a culture first through like a social movement. And the church is kind of, you know, at the root of being able to do that, you know? And so, I think that this is something, you know, that this school choice legislation is something where, you know, this is like an issue coalition that I think, regardless of the disagreements that, you know, exist between, you know, libertarians, Christians, and conservatives, and there's overlap there, we should all be able to unite and work on this issue. I think most people probably know what school choice is, but maybe just, you know, if you want to briefly kind of just unpack like what that kind of legislation looks like, how that actually helps to provide people with more choices and more freedom, and then explain like why you think that this is really important and instrumental for, you know, those of us who are kind of united in this banner of opposing the current sort of like leftist woke regime, you know, why this is kind of, you know, fundamental towards unraveling that.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. It's funny. Can you tell me the most popular episode of I Love Lucy? 90% of people get it right, so don't worry about it.
Oh, gosh. I've only watched a few episodes of I Love Lucy, unfortunately, so I don't think I could even remember any of them.
Okay, 90% of people say The Chocolate Factory. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not, unfortunately, no.
And you weren't homeschooled. Okay.
I was not homeschooled, unfortunately. I'm a first-generation homeschooler, me and my wife and I.
Okay, well, in the episode of Lucy and the Chocolate Factory, her and her best friend are working in this chocolate factory in front of this conveyor belt. And all the little chocolates are just going down the conveyor belt, and they start going faster and faster and faster. So it turns into mayhem because they can't wrap the chocolates fast enough. So they're stuffing them in their shirt. They're eating some. They're putting it in their hair. They're putting it in their hat.
Okay.
Turns into a, you know, a classic.
I've seen that scene before as you're describing it, and I know because I know because a show I grew up with on Nickelodeon reenacted that scene, and people brought that to my attention. So yeah.
Okay. So that's the context of what we're doing right now. I know it's funny. The Lord gave me that actually. I didn't know he watched TV, but okay, he knows all this stuff. So he said that that's conservatives and liberals. And I thought, what? So conservatives are Lucy and Ethel. They stand at the end of the conveyor belt. They're trying to grab all the chocolates. They're trying to deal with gay marriage. They're trying to deal with gun rights. They're trying to deal with free speech. They're trying to deal with censorship. They're trying to deal with welfare. They're trying to deal with open borders, one by one by one by one. And guess what? You're never going to catch all of those chocolates. You're just exhausted. And then he said, liberals, they're the conveyor belt. They don't have to do any work. They can go to bed at night.
Oh, gosh.
The government schools are a conveyor belt.
Yes.
They have 50 million chocolates. You're never going to get them all. Let that sink in for a while, viewers. You're never going to get them all. Isn't it easier for somebody just to go over to the wall and shut off the conveyor belt? We start building our own schools, we're shutting off the conveyor belt. So stop thinking that you're going to get the Bible back in schools. Are you really telling me you want to put the Bible in the hands of all the teachers? This ain't the 1950s. You can't give the Bible to those people. It would just become a mockery. It would be worse. So why do we want to keep getting the Bible in schools? Why don't we just get the kids in the churches? Conservatives are willing to do everything they can to not have to take care of their own kids.
Yeah, that's something that really, and listen, like I understand that there are logistical challenges to getting your kids out of public schools, but when you just sit and do the math and think about the total amount of hours that kids spend with teachers and then the kids that are in that environment with them versus their own parents, it's truly mind-boggling. And then it's sort of, I don't know who coined this phrase, but I've heard it before. Like, people keep acting surprised when they give their kids to Caesar to raise them, and then they turn out Roman. Like, it's right.
Yeah, I post that. I heard the same thing, and I've stolen and I post it all the time. And I am flabbergasted by the amount of pushback I get and the exasperation that people seem to have at the prospect of, you're going to have to raise your kid. I don't know what your thoughts were when you brought him home from the hospital, but They're going to have to stop making those videos. My best friend, she made that video, the first day of school video, where she's jumping up and down with balloons and confetti after her kid goes to school. So I'm like, those are going to have to stop, okay? You're either going to have to homeschool or we're going to have to build, and we can build a network of micro schools where kids can get a little more customized education, because right now they're just in these warehouses. They're not being noticed. The only ones being noticed are the ones that are in trouble. And I just don't feel like people feel seen in this environment. So,
yeah.
Okay. So if I'm going to go into my sales pitch, which you think I've been in it the whole time, but no, I'm going to go up another level, sales. So for my libertarian friends, of which I have few, crazy. School choice is the only government program that shrinks government. So I thought libertarians never met a tax cut they didn't like. Mm-hmm. So school choice is a tax cut. Mm-hmm. Every program in the country where they have implemented school choice, they're about 50% or less than what it costs to run the government schools. So if you want a tax cut, vote school choice. Now, every libertarian I know is for school choice, so I don't have to sell that piece of the puzzle. But I do need them to connect the dots between every other government program. So we're not only financing fed schools at 2 to 3 times the cost of school choice. Failing schools intersect with crime. So if you drop out or you end up getting a worthless degree from a worthless government school, your chance of going into crime goes up. So now we're paying for criminal justice yep. system and prison.
Yep.
So school choice is a tax cut as far as what we pay for prisons. School choice is a tax cut regarding what we pay for the welfare state. So these diploma mills where people are being pushed out of schools where they're not literate, the chances of you ending up on welfare goes up, food stamps goes up, and Section 8 goes up. The chances of you ending up not getting married goes up. So now the fatherlessness epidemic, which feeding into, again, all of these other problems, goes up. Patriotism is going down. Obesity is going up. Abortion is going up. So there's this huge intersection between the issues that conservatives, Christians, patriots, and libertarians say they care about. And the root of it is failing schools. More
right.
morality training coming out of the government schools.
Right. So it's like a vicious cycle. Like the terrible schools, which already are funded by tax dollars, create people who then become, either involved in crime or live in perpetual poverty, in which they're using more government programs and more welfare, and then just further increasing the amount of government spending, and then the increasing the state's ability to justify it's like, oh, we need all these programs because people can't take care of themselves, even right. though it's like, it's sort of like the state is intentionally kidnapping people, crippling them, and then throwing them out into the world. And then right. saying, like, the state, it's the classic, libertarians should understand this, it's like the state creates a problem, and then the state goes, look, we're the solution to the problem we made.
Right. And so all my libertarian friends for the last decade have poured all their energy, not into school choice, but into legalizing weed. So how am I going to get on board with that? Where I'm like, I don't need more weed. That's not solving any problem. Who was really harmed by that compared to the numbers that are being harmed by failing government schools, obesity, failing marriage, welfare, prison, abortion, birth control? how did they end up where the weed was going to be their primary emphasis for a decade? So I'm like, I gotta walk away from this because it's getting on my nerves.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, I do think it's good to, this is a little off topic, but since you brought it up, like, I do think that the war on drugs is largely a failure and doesn't actually decrease, I think, in a meaningful way, the amount of people using certain substances. And then we have a problem with, like, putting a lot of nonviolent people in prison, which only bloats the amount of money we're spending in prisons. And then that actually, I think, worsens the crime problem and gives power to the cartels. But what I will agree with you on is that libertarians are bad at marketing that issue. It's like, I think there's a good, even like a good conservative argument to be made that the war on drugs is just not a good government program. But
listen, I was a liberal making that case.
Right. But libertarians are often making the case be like, no, we want to legalize weed because we want to, you know, they're promoting that libertine sort of like social ethic again. And that is terrible marketing for what is fundamentally, I think, the right policy idea. But, you know, that's why, you know, the work I try to do in the libertarian movement with LCI and I've also been involved, like, in the past, I was a state organizer with the Mises Caucus, and we, you know, I've always tried to do damage control with the public face of libertarianism in that way.
Well, I just want people to not want to be high. So now I don't have a weed problem because I'm just to be high. If people are coming out of school and they are driven and they want to jump into our free market system because they understand how it works and that it's the only system that has lifted millions of people out of poverty, that guy, he ain't trying to be high all the time.
Exactly. Like, these two things work together. Like, we can end the war on drugs, but then we can also say, you know what, like, we need to also get our kids out of these public indoctrination camps, because not only does that make them more likely to embrace values that will lead to, you know, drug use, which as a Christian, I'm not really for drug use unless there's a specific medicinal reason, which I think there can be for cannabis and whatnot. But in general, it's not something I would promote. But yeah, I think you're spot on there that if we get people out of schools, we give them an actual good education that gets them into the free market, all, you know, like, they start hitting the ground running in the free market because they have skills and they have a good education, then yeah, they're driven, they're financially successful, they're a lot less likely to fall into all sorts of vices and pitfalls, I think.
Exactly. So I don't want the show to be hijacked by the weed conversation.
Yeah. No, but
it's my own personal thing. It's irritating.
I get it.
If I go to another libertarian meeting and that's what's going to be the topic, I'm like, no!
then you get the libertarians that want to, we need to privatize the sidewalks and abolish driver's licenses. I'm like, guys, please read the room.
later.
But yeah, no. So in one of the things that to get us back on topic here, there's a way now, some libertarians, not a lot, some libertarians are adverse to Christians and conservatives, and so they might not like this idea, but I think this idea is brilliant. And you kind of foreshadowed this when you talked about the disproportionate amount of churches to the amount of schools, because some people might go, well, I can't homeschool, or I don't have the means to, I don't have the skill set, and private schools are, you know, even if we have school choice vouchers, depending on where you live, they might not pay for it. But Your idea of micro schools in churches, I think, is incredibly fascinating. Honestly, I've never heard anyone pitch that idea before I encountered you in your podcast. So I'm curious, like, is there, I would assume you'd probably know this, like, is this happening already? And do we, you know, like, these churches, I mean, a lot of churches are, like you said, I think, like, they're unoccupied over 90% of the time. So, you know, if we could get a movement of these micro schools being built, making sure the school vouchers will go towards them, and then people would be able to not only have another good alternative to the public schools, but then also, like, I think that's a way to get Christians more involved in helping to be more involved in the community too, because it's not just going to be members of like that church necessarily going to that micro school. So that gets Christians engaging with their community more, which I think is, you know, from a Christian level, like I think that's also a win.
Exactly. It's also a win. It's a win-win. Okay. So let me be clear, because I'm used to all of my objections. I have a whole list of the objections I get when I talk to people. I get the pushback from conservatives. I don't get as much pushback from liberals, actually. So let's take it piece by piece. School choice is funding. The perfect school choice program is what's called Money Follow the Child. So each child represents a dollar amount, and those parents just take their little coupon into the marketplace and they shop based on what's available. So if you wanted to buy a house that didn't exist, guess what? You can't buy that house. You got to buy your house based upon what's on the market at that time. Your dream house may come on the market 5 years after you bought a house. Guess what? Too bad. So you get your little coupon. You go into the marketplace and you shop. I call it a buffet. So when you walk into a buffet, there's many different choices. My preference and what I am advocating for is churches to open schools. But I have no power to stop a non-Christian from opening a micro school in a building that they rent. Right? That's the libertarian way. So we're gonna have agreement on this. We're gonna intersect. The school choice funding would be able to go to competent adults who go into the marketplace to start a school. Now here's some great numbers. Since COVID, 600,000 teachers have left the government school industry. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 600,000 teachers have walked away. Those represent a new movement, and that's called the edupreneurs. I don't know if you saw that episode. I did an episode on the edupreneurs. Those are people that are starting their own schools. Starting a school is a small business. So just like someone wants to start making t-shirts, they can start a school. Now you're in the marketplace, so you have to build something that parents are going to be attracted to.
Right.
Right? So you can start a school, and I do the numbers for you. On the low end, the state may be offering about $5,000 per student. That's a low end. You get 50 kids, which that's a very small school, 50 kids. Then you're going to get $250,000 budget to manage your little micro school. And that's very doable. On the higher end, I use Florida. Florida's giving $8,000 per student. So the funding that could flow into a church, they already have the infrastructure. They already have the building that's sitting there empty 90% of the time. They already have little rooms there. They usually already have a little kitchen. So most churches are already halfway schools. So this isn't going to be a big lift for a church to start a little micro school. They typically already have people that come there once a week. And those people usually have little people that represents potential students. So this is not a complicated puzzle to put together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, I even know like there's a lot of, you know, churches that have that they used to even have schools attached to them, and those schools aren't even being currently used. And like, those are like perfect. Like there's already classrooms set up and spaces that are completely usable. Or like the other day, I mean, just like people start their own daycares, people can start their own, you know, little home. I mean, you already have like homeschool co-ops, but you could like go like, I don't know, like a step above that, which I guess, you know, start your own little micro school. And it can be a church or it can be, it's the free market. So it can be almost anything you can imagine as long as people think it's a good idea and they're like, hey, yeah, I'll, you know, you've convinced me that this is a good investment for my money and to, you know, put my kids in. So I think, and you know, right now people don't, that's the beauty of, you know, like you said, school choice is a tax cut. It's also like it's providing competition, which, right. you know, for as much, which, and I, you know, I feel like the left used to be in favor of school choice, but now I think, you know, it's, that's becoming increasingly rare, which is funny to me because when I was on the left, that was something I'd hear all the time. It was like people need more choices and monopolies are bad. And they talk about, you know, how bad corporate monopolies are. It's like, well, yeah, corporate monopolies can be harmful. Like, but what about like public monopolies that are essentially, you know, not that indistinguishable from corporate monopolies?
They're very indistinguishable because yeah. corporate monopolies lack one thing. They don't have force. Apple can't make me buy their phone. It's the complete opposite. You find yourself sleeping on the sidewalk for 24 hours to get that new phone, not me. But that's a completely, not a monopoly, but that corporations are 100% different than government because government has the power and the ability to use force and to tax you.
Yes.
So the government schools are failing because the nature of government is failure. So you right. can't keep trying to sell me on it because you may as well sell me that lions won't eat gazelles. Lions will always eat gazelles. There'll never be an example where the gazelle ate the lion. Never.
Right.
It'll never happen. So when people understand the nature of government, which is what I, you know, lean on libertarians for, hey, you guys, put that joint down. Start talking about the nature of government is that it will always devour you. Lions will always eat gazelles.
Right. So, and then if you don't, and then because of that, the incentives become if the government schools don't have to compete, it's like, hey, everyone that's in this region has to come here. Well, then there's no market force on them that acts as a check to make sure that they do a good job or that they, you know, the whole idea of free markets is that we believe that it is free markets that help to properly allocate the use of scarce resources because you have that competition, which creates, you know, the ability to gauge what demand is and what's working and what's not working and, you know, supply and demand and whatnot. And that doesn't exist right now in most states that don't have anything but the government monopolies, except for the, I guess, like people who are wealthy enough to just without any assistance at all pay to put their kids in private schools or homeschool. But for a lot of families, and this is only made worse when the government prints money out of thin air, like they have over the last three years, going on 4 years, and make everything three times more expensive, it becomes even harder then for people to try to, you know, find a way to get out of these systems. So, I mean, I think it's an easy sell for Christians, but do you get much pushback from conservatives or Christians in terms of like why they would think this isn't a good idea?
Yeah.
Or what is that pushback? Because I don't understand what it would look like.
It. I have been warned that it was coming, but it didn't make any sense. So let's start with the first one. I get pushback from homeschoolers because they feel that the homeschools will come under government authority.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that towards private schools too, that they think that the school choice vouchers will be, but most of the, I think most of the current legislation that's either been passed or that's on the table have provisions in there that specifically prohibit government, you know, interference or regulation of homeschools and private schools. I think
correct.
I think there's a couple that on, you know, I was listening to your conversation with the people from Kansas, I think, and I think they said that like one of the laws didn't have provisions for either homeschooling or for micro schooling. So I mean, there's improvements that can be made, but in terms of like, you know, I guess there's better or worse versions of the legislation, but the stuff that's on the table right now doesn't come with any government interference, it seems.
Correct. And that it all comes down to, again, you just write the strongest bill, whatever your concerns are, you write those protections into the bill. And I mean, we're not going to have perfection, and we certainly don't have it now, but that is an example of some of the pushback. The same with the Christian schools. Now, where they leave off is these schools are already in operation. They're already not getting government funding. So they can just continue to do what they're already doing. If you want to be a school that takes no funding from the government, you can do that. There's no one forcing right. you to take the money. So it's sort of a straw man, but it is a pushback that I get. The right. other pushback was a farce from the beginning. It was literally hilarious. But that one was the plan to take over the government schools. I got that a lot. They had a plan. You've heard this one. They were going to take over the school boards. And then they didn't even know that the school boards don't even run the schools day to day. One of the benefits that came out of my background, and I know why the Lord sort of tapped me for some of this stuff, is remember I was a union steward for 5 years. So I know what union contracts look like. And I understand they are written, they are designed, they have been perfected for about 80 or 90 years to thwart the enemy. They are written in a very convoluted way where it's difficult for you to penetrate and make changes. So if you want to say you're going to take over the school boards, and I had this conversation with someone and I said, I want you to imagine a wheel. And the wheel, like a Ferris wheel, it has 9 little seats. The way they wrote the union contracts is that 3 of them go off 1 year, and the next 3 go off another year, and the next 3 go off another year. There's a reason behind that, because even if you could get 3 people to run in 1 year, you wouldn't have enough power to make any change. So now you're going to need to have another 3 people run the next year, and then you're going to have to assume 100% of your people won both times. So now you got 6 people on. So maybe you can make some change. But guess what? Next year, 3 of yours went off. So you're constantly in this hamster wheel. So your job is not going to be education. Your job is going to be perpetually finding people to run for school board.
Right, right.
Multiply that wheel. So imagine that Ferris wheel. There's 13,000 school boards in America. So you're about to be trying to manage 13,000 Ferris wheels. That's ridiculous. But again, they'll do anything not to have to just raise their own children.
Right. And then that's also, you know, I guess another short-sighted, you know, problem here with that approach is that it's still ultimately like, it's like trying to reform. I'm trying to think of a good example here. Like it's like trying to reform the cartel, right?
Yeah.
It's like the public school system is just wrong. Like it's fundamentally built on a faulty premise. And so like, even if you got 6 conservative Christians on the board and held them there for a while, that doesn't change the nature of the institution. And then there's the opportunity cost of all the time you're putting into that when you could be building counter institutions, alternative institutions that will do a better job and be probably a better allocation of time and energy. And that doesn't mean, because I know some libertarians are purists and they go, no, we can't do school choice because we just have to live in fantasy land and just abolish all public schools tomorrow. And we can't have any incremental steps from, you know, from here to where we want to go. But I would just say that that's not living in reality, whereas this school choice is not, again, it doesn't mean that it's perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction and a step towards allowing the free market in education to start to gain more ground than it currently has. If the libertarian ideal, people wouldn't have all their tax money being taken to build these public schools in the first place. But like, how do we roll that back? This is one such thing where, and there's a lot of people who are like, they're concerned. Like, that's the problem. The state takes over something, right? They take it over. And then after a long enough period of time, people can't imagine how do we ever educate the kids without the state? right? Like, how did we ever have charity or welfare without the state? How did we ever have security without the state? And, you know, a lot of these things can be done without the state, but you're not going to like turn people on a dime to just kind of like instantly change the worldview, but you can start to give people more freedom and more choices. They see how that works. And then as you're also, this is like perfect because it's changing the economic incentives, but then it's also giving Christians and conservatives more power to impact culture, I think it's almost going to have a compound effect. Absolutely. You know, over time as it gets implemented.
Absolutely. I mean, the scripture says that we're perishing because we have a lack of knowledge, but that word also means vision. So when I'm talking to conservatives, they can't imagine not having the government schools. And that took me a while to absorb. They can't imagine it. Meanwhile, if you go back 100 years and you look at a leftist, could they imagine America with all of these government programs? They had faith. They are operating on more faith than the church operates on. Oof. They didn't get to see any fruit. If I have another conservative talk to me about John Dewey, I'm like, John Dewey is so dead. John Dewey saw no fruit. When John Dewey walked around, he saw a Christian culture. He saw a married culture. He saw a culture with no government programs. And he was pushing for communism in that environment. And guess what? John Dewey won. But he didn't get to see it. But when I ask you to envision us with no welfare, private-owned schools, you can't imagine it. So you fight me. You fight me harder than you fight the left.
That's so true. I mean, I think that is such a I said oof because it's like that is a cutting statement, but it's true that in some ways it's like worse than just that conservatives don't understand social movements. It's also that and you've kind of said this on your podcast too. These social movements are essentially the religions of the left, and in some ways the left believes in and has more faith in their religion and is like motivated to take action for their religion more than not all, but more than a lot of Christian evangelicals.
That's why they get out on the streets. They can activate. Remember I said we need an activist class. They can activate millions of people in 24 hours. Meanwhile, the church has 330,000 buildings. They can't get anybody activated. You can barely get people out. We better get out and go to Congress and start lobbying for this. They won't do it because they don't really. I got a nudge from the Lord. And he said, they don't believe what they say they believe. Mm. Okay. So now that's what I tell conservatives. Oh, you don't believe what you say you believe.
Well, I mean, isn't that what it says in the book of James, that faith without works is dead? Right. So, I mean, like they might have a faith, but it needs to be matured. They need to go through more sanctification and more, you know, have their faith be bolstered to be like, you know what? Like if the, you know, I like the saying I got from my dad growing up, it's like, you know, we as Christians, we believe that we're born again, right? That we've had an encounter with a living God. Like how can we say we have had an encounter with the living God and not walk away changed? Right. How can we have an encounter with the living God and then not be inspired to go out and live for that kingdom, right? So I mean, and so we need to be out there trying to be fishers of men. We need to be out there trying to transform the culture. And I feel like there's too many Christians and conservatives who are very content to play like Monday morning quarterback and complain about all the problems. But then what do? Well, they just go to their job Monday through Friday. They go to church on Sunday. They watch the football games and they just keep on, you know, they'll go and vote every 4 years. If you're lucky, they might go to a couple midterm elections, but they're not active. They're not involved. Listen, I would, even though I'm a libertarian, it's like, if all the conservative Christians would just even band together and start voting Republican, that would be an improvement. But there's too many that just have adopted this spirit of of defeat and apathy and just woe is me. And I'm like, I don't know what Bible you're reading, but the Bible I'm reading shows a lot of men and women of God who were filled with this holy fire, this righteousness, to get out there and proclaim truth, even when they were the minority. I mean, look at the story of Elijah against the prophets of Baal. Like, that's, to me, that's the kind of boldness and the kind of, energy that we should be bringing. And it is just so telling about the state of the church right now, which I pray more Christians start to wake up. But right now, yeah, like the left, they have more religious conviction than we do. And I think that's got to change.
Well, you know, another thing that I figured out talking to conservatives, because they would ask you these questions and I would think, that's ridiculous. So they would say, how long do you think this is going to take? Like they had something else to do. Like they got somewhere else to be. I said, oh, I get it. You don't love this. See, the left, they love their jobs. They volunteer.
Right.
Because they love their work. So I would think that we would be the ones loving our work, but they don't. They need to get back to that football game that they're watching. So they're clock watching. And I'm like, wow. Okay. This is what I'm up against.
Yeah. No, we need to be like Paul. We need to be happy warriors, happy bond servants for Christ.
They don't want revenge. Like me. I want revenge.
I don't know if we should be seeking revenge, but I get what you're saying. Like, you know, we should at the very least say, you know, like no more. Like, you know, we're not going to continue to just let the secular woke monster just run over and take. I mean, and they didn't do it overnight. Like, I think the problem is, and you've said this, it's like people want to know how long it's going to take, that they want a quick, easy fix. No, like the left started doing this decades ago. Decades ago.
I'm like, yeah. We don't have a magic wand. We're going to have to dig our way out of this.
Right. But it's like, if you care about your kids, if you care about your kids' kids and your future generations, well, then you need to be putting the work in now so that they have a better future to grow up in. So,
I got to give you one more pushback. I got to give you the one more pushback.
Okay.
So I know them so well that if I do a presentation, I just want to preempt them. This one is really sad, but it's accurate. So people will say, you know, you thought that I was advocating for all churches, which I am. I'm advocating for all churches, but everyone's not Christian. So I can't expect that all of this movement will be only Christian. So sure. They will bring up these, well, what if the other XYZ group, they want to start a school? Meanwhile, you have to balance that out. That means that there will be parents that would want to take their children over to the other XYZ, because you can start a school and you have no customers. So that could only happen if there's a marketplace for XYZ. So I came up with a worst case scenario. Even in the worst case scenario, school choice still makes sense for Christians, patriots, and libertarians. So have you ever heard of Minister Louis Farrakhan? Are you familiar with him?
I don't think so.
Oh, he's the minister, the leader of the Nation of Islam. So Christian conservatives don't really, they're not a fan. Okay. So I would ask them, have you heard of Minister Farrakhan? And they would say yes. And then I would say, so based on what you know about Minister Farrakhan, do you think that he would teach, oh my gosh, I'm going to run out of battery. Do you think he would teach abortion? And they would say no. Do you think he would teach single parenthood? No. Do you think he would teach people to drink? Because he is a Muslim. No. Do you think he would teach people to do drugs? No. You think he would teach people to start their own businesses? Yes. You think he would teach people to be on welfare? No. You think he would have drag queen story hour? No. So 90% of what the guy who's your worst case scenario would match what you would do. That's your worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think what we're living in now is more of the worst case scenario. Yeah. And any moves away from it, I think, are things we should celebrate. So yeah, cool. I think that's a good response to that. objection. There was one question in the comments, which he said, what would you propose would be a good policy for libertarian candidates who run in very rural areas where resources are very limited? He said, my wife and I rely on both income. The kids are too small to stay home alone. We don't really have the income to send our kids to the one Catholic private school in our area. You know, what are some, because, you know, in urban areas versus rural areas, this is going to look different. You know, what are some ways in which people who are in rural areas can, you know, find ways to, you know, because that's one thing I really want to also help people do. I know your work and what Herzog does is focused on this too, is to help people find the resources to be able to actually find ways to get their kids out of the public schools. So do you have any advice for people like that?
I do, but I'm going to have to plug in.
Yeah, go ahead and plug in. I'll take while she's getting her phone charged back up and coming back, because she said her device was dying. I'll just again remind people that if these kind of conversations are the ones that you like to hear, you like that, you know, we bring these different guests on, have different conversations about things pertaining to liberty, pertaining to our faith, pertaining to how we can push these things into our society and be good advocates for the kingdom of God and for, you know, increasing human flourishing. This is, you know, all the stuff that we do and we focus on as the Libertarian Christian Institute. And so we, of course, depend on your donations, on your support. You know, if you can't make any donations at this time, even just sharing these videos around on social media with your friends and family is, of course, a big help. And also, if you are able to contribute any amount, if it's, you know, a $5 gift here, $10 gift there, we appreciate that. If you're able to contribute at $10 or more a month, then you're able to become a LCI insider. And that allows you to get access to a lot of perks. You get actually free copies of our book, Faith Seeking Freedom, as well as some other free ebooks and goodies. You get to have monthly meetings with the hosts and staff at LCI, such as I. So yeah, if you haven't checked that out, please do that. Also, make sure you subscribe to this channel and our feeds, wherever you're watching. Lisa, you back now?
Yes.
Good, good. After I just got done filibustering there for a little bit. So the question was basically like for those living in rural areas, what advice do you have for them? And just for parents in general who are like, I really want to make the switch, but we don't have school choice yet. Is there anything we can do to get our kids out of public schools?
Okay, well, specifically for rural areas, actually a lot of data that's coming out on that now and how is school choice impacting rural areas. Most of the numbers are coming out of Florida. And what it shows is that the number of rural schools in Florida since they implemented school choice, they've doubled. So the rural areas do respond to the school choice funding. Number two, the homeschool co-ops seem to be the best area for rural areas. Because again, the whole of America is dotted with churches throughout the rural areas. So if you just work with your own pastor and you can get literally free, is quality. I know for a fact, Ron Paul, the former congressman, Ron Paul, libertarian godfather, has a free homeschool curriculum. If you can afford a flat screen TV in your rural school, you can bring in free homeschool curriculum from Ron Paul. Just a shout out for Ron Paul, okay?
And Ron Paul is the perfect intersection for all of us, for Christians, libertarians, and conservatives, right?
Oh, yeah. He was instrumental for me. I started going to those meetups that he was having when I was coming out of, you know, my cult. So that's the best answer for the people who are living in a rural area. If you can work with some other families and you guys can rotate the responsibilities. So you're bringing in free curriculum. Then I have this other idea and I hope people start using it. I call it like Legos. I just made up that name, Legos. And At one point, the Lord literally told me that the yellow pages are my teachers. Again, I don't know what he's talking about half the time, but it comes through slowly and surely. That the yellow pages are basically free teachers. So you could call up someone, your local barber, and say, can you come in and talk to the kids about how you started your business? He would love to. It's only one little afternoon out of his life. And then the next day you call a doctor, a lawyer, a car salesman, a real estate agent. All of these people are just resources in the community. They never get tapped. This is something kids are actually interested in. Do you think that a little boy wouldn't love the car dealers to show up at the school with a new car, talk to them about what he does, how do you buy a car? And then I was struck when I thought, most people don't learn these things until they're actually doing them. It might be a good idea to learn them before you do them. So if someone could come in and talk about credit, how do you buy a house, bring in wedding planners, literally. The yellow pages are your teachers. You could easily imagine the yellow pages. Then imagine you have school 180 days. You don't think there's 180 people that you could tap, even in a rural area, that would come and talk to your kids and they would love it every day?
Yeah, no, that's, I think our homeschool co-op has done stuff like that before. And yeah, it's such a fantastic idea. And yeah, there's usually homeschool co-op somewhere within your area. So like go to Facebook, go to, you know, social media, you know, call different churches and stuff. I'm sure that there's different. And then beyond just that, there's organizations out there that'll help you, that there's people who who don't have kids, who have money, who are like, hey, I want to help people get their kids out of public school. So there are, you know, that's free markets and voluntarism at work. So it's definitely hard and scary, and I'm sympathetic to parents who are in situations where it's not immediately easy. You know, like I'm blessed that I'm able to, you know, have an income that, I mean, I'm not killing it, don't get me wrong, but it's just enough that my wife's able to stay home and take care of the kids and homeschool them while I work. And, you know, God provides for us. And, you know, I'd say, you know, it's, I don't want to shame anybody, but I would just encourage them. Like if you feel convicted to pull your kids out of these, government indoctrination facilities, and we know the harm that they do, we know that they don't, that they're not as you said, they're not instruments that we can go in and try to reform and just put Christians in charge of. So we need to be, you know, doing the job as parents, as raising our kids. Have some faith. Have some faith that if you step out there and start trying to figure this out, that God will be faithful and answer, is what my word of encouragement would be.
I want to give a shout out to Herzog Foundation. That's H-E-R-Z-O-G. So what Herzog is doing is they are providing free training to people, individuals, organizations that want to start a school. So go to Herzog Foundation and look under the resources. That particular program is called School Box, and it will walk you through how to start a school. They also have a new program they just launched for homeschoolers. And for parents who are a little hesitant, there's another podcast on the Herzog Network, and it's called Making the Leap. And it's a couple. Listen to the first couple of episodes, and they walk through their process of pulling their kids out of government schools, placing the kids in a Christian school. So it's really interesting. And I want everybody to hear that. And at the very least, take the free program on how to start your own school.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like I said, there's Herzog, there's the Ron Paul homeschool. There's so many things out there that of resources that are available at your fingertips. The other thing I tell people, because sometimes they're worried about, like, if they're, you know, trying to find books to do a particular curriculum, I'm like, listen, there's eBay. There's your library. Like a lot of the times, the things that you need are available secondhand or to be borrowed, or you can, you know, a lot of times people will use their books, then their kids grow up and they're like, hey, I have a bunch of books I accumulated from homeschooling. I don't need them anymore. So they're, take advantage of all the resources out there. They do exist because people have been doing this for a while. And I think that the more we can do this, the more that, you know, listen, this will also create the demand for the kind of legislation that we want to pass to be pushed. So it's all cyclical, I think. So, Lisa, I really appreciate you coming on and covering all these different topics with me. I want to give you the last word here to, you know, anything else that you feel like we wanted to cover before we hop off in terms of the subjects we've talked about. And then also remind people where they can find you, plug your, you know, where they can find you on social media, where they can find your podcast and things like that before we close out.
Okay, well, the last thing I want to leave everybody with, again, is the numbers, that there's 99,000 government schools versus 330,000 churches that sit empty 90% of the time. Once you hear that, you can't unhear it. You're going to be driving around in your city, you're going to be at a stop sign, and you're going to look over and there's going to be a church, and it's going to be a random Wednesday, and you're going to notice that church is sitting empty. What difference would that make if that church had 50 kids, 100 kids in that building? Then they wouldn't be getting indoctrinated in the government schools. So if you're complaining all the time, shut your boca, start a school, talk to your pastor and say, can we start a homeschool co-op in this building? Or can we start a micro school in this building? We now have 34 states. So school choice has gone mainstream. 34 states now have some form of school choice legislation run by the Secretary of State's office. So look up your state and see whether or not there's a school choice program that maybe you haven't heard of. If there isn't, make a phone call, start pressuring your legislators to pass school choice legislation. You really want money follow the child. It doesn't matter. Please don't get caught up in this drama about whether or not it goes to wealthy people, because wealthy people drive on the highways. They pay taxes. So they should have a right to the same programs that anybody else has a right to. I don't think this is something that should be means tested, because people are paying property taxes and you should not have to pay for property taxes and pay for the school that you don't use. Number two, the podcast is called Schools Out, and it's on the Herzog Foundation website. It's also on Twitter, YouTube, and everywhere else you get your podcast. Schools Out with Lisa Watson. On Twitter, I'm Watson Speaking. WATLN Speaking, SPEAKING. Look at you. Perfect. If anybody wants to anybody wants to talk to me, I want to do all podcasts. I want to talk to every Christian in America and man that they open a school or get behind school choice. Since we have an election coming up,
yeah,
vote school choice.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, like, make sure you follow, like if you're following me on X and people like Lisa on X, I try to do a good job. Anytime I see that bills are up on the table anywhere in the country, there's usually people who are getting behind that to organize phone banking. And from my experience in politics, the legislatures will tell you that, like, when they get enough phone calls that it starts to disrupt them, that is kind of what gets sometimes action to take place. And so, and it we've seen it happen before and it can happen again. So some people think, like, what can I do to do this? Like, I might not live in a state where it's up on the table yet, or it is, I don't know how I can help. I'm just one person. Phone banking is such a, you know, it takes 10 minutes call. You don't get something, leave a voicemail. Every single person that does that is a drop in the bucket. And like there's more of us than there are of them. We just have to, you know, we have to channel that same energy that the left's already harnessed. And so if they can do it, there's no reason we can't. I mean, I want to end on this verse, Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And, you know, so that was God telling the Israelites to go and conquer land. We're just trying to go and, you know, take back what is ours, take back our freedoms, take back our sovereignty as parents, as families, as communities, as churches and Christians, to say, you know what, like, these are our kids, not yours. And we're going to raise them. We're going to do what God has commanded us to do, to lead them in the way of what is good, so that they will have that, you know, to fall back on for all the days of their life. So, Lisa, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much again for coming on. Everyone, please, if you're watching this after you're done, go follow Lisa on X. Go to Herzog. Was it Herzog
Foundation?
Yeah, Herzog Foundation. .com on Twitter. I think it's Herzog Education. You can also follow them on Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what to call it. I always just say both. I think it's everyone.
The cutest name, so I can't let it go.
I know. But yeah, please follow them, because I've very much enjoyed Lisa's podcast, and I plan to check the rest out as well. But that is all we have for you today. So I'll let you guys go. As always, remember, live at peace and live for Christ.